Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the TBD College Football Show. I'm your host, Mason, and guys, it is playoff time once again. The postseason is officially here this Friday. We've got our first couple games coming up, and we're going to jump into a lot. We've got a lot to go over. It is currently Tuesday, December 16th, 2025, and I'm coming to you on a very unusually cold day in Charleston, South Carolina. We've got a high today of, I think, 35, which is low for South Carolina. So all you guys out there with me in South Carolina, welcome to the show. Anyway, first game, we're going to jump right into this because we got a lot of stuff to get through today. We got number 9 Alabama versus number 8 Oklahoma this Friday, kicking off at 8 p.m. in the Palace in Norman. Bama, a 1.5-point favorite according to ESPN Bet. This is the rematch. We mentioned this last week, right? Bama fans split 50-50. Some want a chance to go prove that the first game in Tuscaloosa was not the real Alabama. And a lot of fans from Alabama do not want to go to Norman, but I can tell you pretty much the consensus of Oklahoma fans is they want this game. They want a shot to prove that they have an elite offense as well as an elite defense. And they want a chance to prove it and to actually prove the haters that are saying, yeah, well, they just got turnovers and Bama out-yardaged them by double their yards and all this different stuff. Oklahoma fans want a chance to prove. English is hard, guys. They want a chance to prove that they are the real deal. They are the elite team. And as we've mentioned many times on this podcast over the years, it's hard to beat a team twice in the same season. It truly is. So what's this game going to look like, right? We had some injuries. This was a big focal point for Alabama. They were missing Josh Quavis, starting tight end, Jam Miller, first-string running back, LT Overton, All-American defensive lineman. They all missed the SEC championship, and they could possibly be back in this game. OU, however, they were missing R. Mason Thomas, their really, really good defensive end. He hasn't played a snap since Tennessee on November 1st with a quad injury, and he missed the first round against Alabama as well, and he will possibly be back in this game too. We know that the whole season, John Mateer has kind of been coming off some injury with his thumb surgery as well, and apparently the KT tape is finally off the thumb. So with a month to prepare, is this going to be a different-looking Oklahoma offense? The first game, turnovers really made the difference. Alabama turned the ball over 3 times. They lost by 2 points, even though they doubled OU's offensive yards, 406 to 212. I think Alabama got early on, had a pick 6. They really should have had another interception, but it was called back for pass interference. And then special teams, they knocked the ball out of Ryan Williams' hands. They recovered it for a fumble. And then also they had the strip sack on Ty Simpson late in the fourth quarter. And they got in some really good pressure, some really good turnovers. And I think I mentioned this last week, but that was the first time all season that Ty Simpson had really been pressured. He hadn't really had many guys in his face all season. So this was definitely a big deal, and it's something that they're going to have to try to replicate for Oklahoma. Oklahoma's going to have to try to replicate that. So Alabama, Ty Simpson, right? Strengths, he's got big-time arm talent. He can escape the pocket when needed. He's actually a pretty good decision maker. But his weakness is he does not handle pressure well, and he has been turning the ball over. It seems that he's been having a pretty steady decline since the South Carolina game. Didn't play well against LSU, and then, yeah, even in the South Carolina game, didn't look good, ended up winning the game. So I would say for Ty Simpson, you know, he's really going to have to try to figure out a way to escape pressure. I was telling some of my friends last week, you know, in practice, if I was Kalen DeBoer, I am putting as much pressure on Ty Simpson as I can in practice because I want him to make sure that he is able to escape the pocket, make good decisions, and not turn the ball over. For John Mateer, his strengths are kind of the same. He is not a great deep ball accurate passer, but he can make the short chunk yardage passes when he needs to, and he can escape the pocket extremely well. I would say between the two, I think Alabama's Ty Simpson definitely has the better decision making, but I think that John Mateer has the better pocket presence, and I think that he would probably handle pressure better. When it comes to the trenches battle, right, when it comes to the line of scrimmage, the Alabama offensive line, the rushing offense is averaging 116 yards a game. That's ranked 111th in college football. Yards per carry, 3.6, again, 111th. And what I'm trying to imply here is Bama's run game, they have struggled a ton. They rushed for -3 yards against Georgia in the SEC championship. And I understand, you know, you're missing Jam Miller, you're missing your other running back. But at some point, you know, you've got to put a run game together, and it hasn't been there all season. Even when Jam Miller has been there, like, you know, we're looking 116 yards a game. It's ranked 111th. They have not been good at running the ball. Oklahoma's defensive front, their rush defense, 82.4 yards per game allowed. That's top five in the nation. Yards allowed per rush is 2.5. Staff rate and pressure, they're top in the nation in TFLs and sacks. OU's run defense is significantly better than Alabama's run offense. This is going to be a big-time matchup, and we saw this in the first game, but this is going to be another big-time matchup for Oklahoma. They've got to be able to replicate what they did in that game. And for Alabama, this has been the story all season. They're a passing team. They're not a running team. So you have to get Jeremy Bernard, you know, in the slot and available making plays. You've got to be able to get Ryan Williams open and move it down the field because he is shifty and he will beat you. Trust me, as a Georgia fan, I know he can do it. And I don't know why they haven't been able to do it. I guess injury or whatever else is the excuses have been, but they've got to get Ryan Williams involved in this game because for Alabama, it's live by the pass, die by the pass. They've got to be able to move the ball on the ground, which is going to be far and few between with the way that this Oklahoma defense is playing. They've got to be able to make plays through the air. They've got to be able to make plays through the air. So for me, I know it's hard to beat a team twice in the same season. Alabama favored by 1.5 points on the road. That would be, if I was an Oklahoma Sooner on that team, I would feel extremely disrespected that they're favored on our home turf. I'm going to go Oklahoma here. I am. I just don't think that it's a great matchup for Alabama. Plus, it's a night game, and this time they're on the road in the Palace in Norman. I just don't think that Alabama, unless they get extremely healthy and they can get Josh Cuevas back into the equation, they get LT Overton back on the defensive line, I'm just not sure that Alabama has what it takes to beat that defense. And what it's really going to come down to for Oklahoma is, can John Mateer move the ball? This is something they struggled with. They had a lot of short fields against Alabama, but that's what Alabama has been doing all year. They've been giving teams short fields, winning games close. I don't see it, so I'm going to go with Oklahoma in this one. All right, first game on Saturday, and I'm not going to lie to you. I know that the reason these time slots get picked is because they do bids for the different TV networks, but this game right here should 100% be a night kickoff, and I have no idea why it's not. It's number 10 Miami versus number 7 Texas A&M. Saturday, 12 p.m., 11 a.m. kickoff. In College Station, A&M favored by 3.5 at home. A&M is 7-0 this year at home. Now, to be fair, though, look at their schedule. No Alabama, no Georgia, no other big teams in the SEC that they've really had to play this year. I think the biggest game that they've played and won this year is probably Missouri on the road. So this is going to be very interesting. Carson Beck, he started the season kind of good, a lot of Heisman odds, Heisman favorite stuff, talks in his name, and then he throws 4 picks against Louisville. As a Georgia fan, I was saying just wait, it's coming eventually, but he's actually kind of cleaned it up down the stretch, turning the ball over 0 times in his last 3 games. When we go to the other side, Marcel Reed, he's thrown 4 interceptions in his last 3 games, threw 2 against Texas in DRK, and currently Miami is averaging 1 turnover per game. And with Marcel Reed being a running quarterback, I'm not sure they're going to be able to get that going because they have a very good run defense, especially against the quarterback run. They've only given up 91 rushing yards a game versus Power 4 opponents. A&M, on average against Power 4 opponents, has given up an average of 323 yards a game. Not great. But Miami is not without their weaknesses as well. Pass defense are giving up around 195 yards a game and 72 yards per attempt. So with wide receivers like Mario Craver and KC Concepcion, they can definitely expose that. Miami, they defend the run well. They can definitely be caught off guard, though, by motion or play action, and it makes their defensive line spread thin and gives up chunk yardage runs. So by using motion, A&M can actually create mismatches for their wide receivers and possibly get the ground game going against a very good Miami defense, which they will need in this game if they want to try to open up the pass and use Marcel Reed as the true dual threat that he is. But there's a reason we play this game on grass and not on paper. I'm going to go with Texas A&M here. I think that I've already seen Miami go on the road this year to Texas at SMU with an 11 a.m. kickoff and lose. I do not trust Carson Beck. I think that I have to trust Texas A&M a little more here, Plus, I haven't really seen Miami be dominant against a good football team this year. So I think it's going to be a close game. Don't get me wrong. Like, both teams had a lot of time to prepare for this game. Neither played in their conference championship, and they're in the playoffs. But I do think that A&M is going to win it in a close one here at Kyle Field. It's one of the hardest places to play in the SEC. I don't think that Miami's played in a place in an environment like that. And with an 11 a.m. kickoff on the road, give me Texas A&M in this one. All right, y'all. We've had a new Heisman winner crowned. It is Fernando Mendoza, quarterback from Indiana. And I got to say, there's a lot of controversy around this one. There's been a lot of comparing about Fernando Mendoza to other Heismans, notably guys like Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray, Jaden Daniels. So I said, after the Big Ten championship, I think Fernando Mendoza just pushed himself up into first place in the Heisman race. And so the question kind of is, well, if Julian Sand had won the Big Ten, would he have won the Heisman? And so what is this really about? Is this about winning a championship? I mean, you had guys up there too, like Diego Pavia and Jeremiah Love, two guys that were extremely important to their team. So there's been a lot of controversy about this. So the question is, was Fernando Mendoza deserving of the Heisman? Well, by the numbers, he's 24th in the country in passing yards. He had one game over 300 yards passing, had one good win against Oregon and Ohio State, turned the ball over a couple times. He is number one in passing touchdowns. But they played a terrible out-of-conference schedule versus G5s and an FCS school, Indiana State. Their in-conference schedule was bad. It included six of the bottom nine teams in the Big Ten. And like I said earlier, does Julian Sand win the Heisman if Ohio State wins the Big Ten? What's this award really about? To me, it's like who means more to their team. So who did mean more to their team? Cal with Mendoza the last 2 years before he transferred, both years 6-7. Cal without Mendoza 2025, 7-5. Indiana without Mendoza last year when they had Curtis Rourke at quarterback, 11-1 in a playoff berth. This year, Indiana with Mendoza, 13-0 in a playoff berth. Not much changed. You went 13-0, you won two extra games this year, beat Ohio State in the chip, with a terrible schedule. I'm honestly not sure, just because I'm not big on his schedule, and for the reasons I mentioned earlier, they almost lost to Penn State. And to me, it's just the Heisman is about who is more important to their team. For me, my Heisman pick would have been Diego Pavia. Why? Because if you put Mendoza on Vandy, they're probably 7-5 this year. Nowhere close to 10-2. Vandy's rise is on the back of Diego Pavia. Without Diego Pavia, they're easily, 4-8, 5-7. He did everything for this team, and he did it with a much tougher schedule and a much tougher conference. It's a physical conference, and I don't want to sound like an SEC homer. I get it, but the SEC is the toughest conference in college football. It's the most physical conference in college football. You know, you wonder why you have five stars end up at places like South Carolina or Kentucky. It's because the whole conference is deep. They might not be good. They might not be better than like the best in the Big Ten, but they're still physical teams. I mean, we almost saw 4-8 South Carolina beat Alabama this year. It happens. And Alabama's a playoff team. And to me, Diego Pavia had way more clutch moments. I mean, big moments against LSU, huge runs against Tennessee on the road in Neyland, which is another really tough place to play in the SEC. I understand that people don't like Diego Pavia because of his character. Don't get me wrong. I love Fernando Mendoza. Like, I think he's a great kid. I think he's a good quarterback. But I don't think that he was Heisman caliber. I think you got to give it to a guy like Diego Pavia. He meant the most to his team. Without him, Vanderbilt is not beating teams that they beat this year. And to me, that's what it means to be a Heisman. It's not just a popularity contest. It's not who wins the most games. It's not who wins the conference. It's about who means the most to their team. Who showed up in clutch moments? Who had big-time plays? Who had championship plays, championship moments? To me, that's Diego Pavia. He didn't get to play in a championship this year. But look at everything that he did. Look at how many times he ran the ball. 36 total touchdowns, only three behind Fernando Mendoza. He just had more rushing touchdowns. He wasn't as good of a passer, but he was able to escape the pocket and make big-time plays with his legs. And without him, Vandy does not go 10-2. He is the best player on their team. He is Vanderbilt. You can't look at Fernando Mendoza and say Fernando Mendoza is Indiana because they spread it around their team. Without Fernando Mendoza, you could put any other four-star, five-star quarterback at Indiana. Maybe they don't win the Big Ten, but they still do well enough to make a playoff spot, especially with that schedule. So to me, that's what it means to be a Heisman. That's who I would have as my Heisman pick. All right, back into the playoff games. We've got number 11, Tulane, versus number 6, Ole Miss. It's a 3:30 p.m. kick, and of course, Ole Miss is favored by 17.5 points. And what the crazy thing is, that's not even the biggest spread in this playoff. It's another rematch in the playoff somehow. Last time, Ole Miss won by 5 touchdowns, 45-10. This time, though, they're without Lane Kiffin, but I don't really know that's going to make much of a difference. Tulane does have an explosive offense. They went 2-1 versus Power 4 opponents this year, beating Northwestern and the eventual ACC champion Duke. They averaged 423 yards versus the two Power 4 teams they beat this year, 425 total rushing between those two games as well. Jake Retzlaff, I mean, you know, the transfer from BYU, he's pretty good, man, against American Conference opponents. And I guess a couple Power 4s, but Jake Retzlaff, dual threat focal point, combining for well over 200-plus rushing and passing yards in both games. So he is a dual threat. He can run the ball. He can make the passes when he needs to. With him at the helm, I guess anything is technically possible. But in order for Tulane to win, which honestly, out of the two G5s, them and JMU, this is actually the more likely team. Like, if I had to bet my life on it by picking one of these teams to win against the Power 4 team they're playing in the playoff, I'm going to pick Tulane over Ole Miss, obviously. But they're the most likely to win out of the two G5s in this playoff. They will need a perfect game. In order to win this game, they will need a perfect game. They've got to win the turnover battle. They've got to have long drives averaging at least 4 yards per attempt. 4 times 3 does not equal 12 in football. 4 times 3 equals a first down in football, all right? So they need to do that. They need to control the time of possession, keep the defense out there for longer and wear them down, which is going to be hard to do because Ole Miss, surprisingly, actually does have a pretty good defense to go along with their very explosive offense. They're going to hit Ole Miss with small mismatches on offense. They're going to have perfect special teams. Their punting unit is going to have to do extremely well, and they're going to have to be able to make field goals. And most of all, you're going to have to win the line of scrimmage, which is going to be tough. It's going to be tough against this Ole Miss offense. They run the ball extremely well. Kewon Lacy, very effective physical downhill runner. They're going to have to stop him. Ole Miss, they love to go tempo. They move the ball extremely effectively and extremely quick. They're going to have to keep up. Obviously, I'm going to pick Ole Miss in this game. I just don't think that Tulane has the manpower or the depth to keep up. I think they're going to get worn down extremely quickly. I think Ole Miss is going to run away with this one. And I honestly would pick Ole Miss to cover in this one. But anything is possible. It really is. It's college football at the end of the day, and it's a playoff game. Unfortunately for Tulane, they're going to have to play at this stadium a second time where they already lost. I don't think it's a 45-10 situation again. I think Tulane keeps it a little bit closer this time around, especially with Lane Kiffin not being there. Obviously, they still have Pete Golding at the head coaching position, but now he's going to be head coach and DC. And you've still got Charlie Weiss Jr., but we just don't know also what this Ole Miss team, they've gone through a lot in the past month since the Egg Bowl and since Lane Kiffin left for Ole Miss. Obviously, the AD and Pete Golding trying to keep things very, very upright around there, trying to keep the spirits up. You know, you lose your head coach right before the playoffs to a rival school nonetheless, and now you're trying to keep all these guys' heads up, keep morale up, and go try to win a playoff game. And so I think that, you know, Tulane has at least that to their benefit, but again, I just think Ole Miss has the better team here. I don't even think it's going to be close. I don't think it's going to be, again, like I said, a 35-point win this time. But, you know, I got at least, I think Ole Miss wins by at least 3 touchdowns. So before we move on to our next playoff game, we're going to hit the mailbag real quick. Matt from South Carolina asks, why do analysts claim equal strength of schedule across conferences when there are obviously skill differentials? I don't know that it's as much of a skill differential as it is a physicality differential. So somehow Indiana actually has an average 32 ranked strength of schedule. Vanderbilt averages a 50th ranked strength of schedule. And I'm using this as an example because we mentioned Diego Pavia versus Fernando Mendoza for the Heisman, right? Indiana, 6 out of their 9 conference opponents were the bottom 9 of the conference. in their out of conference, they played FCS Indiana State, Kennesaw State, and I believe FAU. I don't understand how that relegates a 32nd ranked strength of schedule when Vanderbilt is out here playing teams like Tennessee, LSU, even though they weren't as good this year, but still really physical team, Alabama, Texas, all these guys that are really physical teams in the SEC. So, no, I don't really understand how. I think it's a lot of bias, to answer your question. I definitely do think it's bias. That's why analysts claim equal strength of schedule across conferences. There are obviously skill differences there, yes. I think that for like a conference like the Big Ten, a lot of their talent and skill players are at the top four or five universities in the conference, right? Michigan, Ohio State, Indiana, Oregon, USC. But below that, you know, you don't have a lot of really good skill players at Purdue or Michigan State or at Illinois, right? But in the SEC, I mentioned this earlier, you know, you've got a five-star that just decommitted from Georgia to go to Vanderbilt. It's the first five-star, I think, in Vanderbilt's history. You've got guys like Dylan Stewart playing at South Carolina. You've got guys from Georgia like Demon Dumas Johnson transferring to Kentucky. You have, it is just a deeper league. And I think it comes down to bias. I think, you know, because you look at analysts, I really do think so. I think it comes down to bias. I think you look at, like, the Big Ten, and Big Ten analysts are saying that they've got the best strength of schedule. As you look at the SEC, they're saying the same thing. I think it comes down to bias is really what it is. I do think that there are teams that are more physical and more leagues that are more physical than others. I think you kind of have the same skill levels across the conferences, but it's kind of a clear favorite that the Big Ten and the SEC are the best two conferences in college football. And I would say that the SEC is the more physical league. But just to long story short, it's just bias. That's what I think it is. All right, back to the playoffs. Last playoff game of the weekend. We obviously have number 12 JMU versus number 5 Oregon. And I promise you, this is not going to take me long. 7:30 p.m. kick in Autzen. Good Lord. This is not good for JMU. Oregon favored by 21.5. It is the largest spread. And I just want to get on a soapbox and say, like, this should not be a thing in college football playoff. There should not be that big of a point spread in a college football playoff game. There just shouldn't be. I remember Georgia being a 13.5 point favorite over TCU. And that, at the time, was the biggest spread coming into a championship game. And now we've got a 21.5 point spread for a first-round playoff game. The spread says it all. Oregon, they've been a powerhouse all year, only losing one game to the eventual Big Ten champion, Indiana. JMU, they don't even have a win over a Power 4 opponent, and yet here they are because of Duke. I think even with a perfect game, this one is already over for JMU. They just don't have the athletes to compare with Oregon. They don't. And they're going to go on the road in a night game. I mean, I would pick Oregon to cover the spread here. JMU's best win is probably their win against Troy in the Sun Belt Championship. That's their best win. Congratulations. Welcome to the playoff. I guess that's all it takes nowadays. And I know I've been on my soapbox about this last week, guys, but it just, I feel so bad for teams like Vanderbilt, BYU, Notre Dame, who deserved playoff spots and basically got shafted because we had to put the top five conference opponents, which, to be fair, like, if it would have been Virginia, like, at least, like, that would have been an ACC champion, like, they would have got in, and then, you know, we would have had Tulane. That's one thing. But because there was another Power 4 champion, we had to go with the American Tulane. That's one thing. That's fine. But then we bring in JMU. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Take the G5, put them in their own playoff system. I've had so many people tell me, like, oh, there's no money for it. Yes, there is. Yes, there is. I guarantee you, people like HBO, TNT, TBS, CBS, they're all wanting postseason college football coverage. And I guarantee you, you take those games, put them in some minor bowls, and have a 12-team G5 playoff, would be awesome. I mean, stop. And a lot of people were saying to me, like, well, you're just saying that, like, and it's just so rude. Like, you got to give the little guy a chance. First of all, not in this playoff, we don't. Well, I guess we have to because of the format, but we shouldn't have to. But also, it's not coming from a place of hatred for the G5. It's coming from a place of, like, these teams are never going to have a shot to win a championship. Not with the way NIL recruiting in the transfer portal is. It's never going to happen. I think you put them in their own league with their own playoff and give these guys a chance to win an actual championship. We look at FCS, right? We have Division I, Division II, Division III. Why do we not do that with FBS? Get rid of P4, get rid of G5. FBS Division I, FBS Division II. The G5s go to Division II, they have their own playoff system, and they don't get pushed around by the bigger guys. I think I mentioned it last week. Ohio State's roster last year cost them $20 million. You're not going to have NIL funds like that pushed into these smaller G5 schools. You're never going to see a MAC school win a championship in the current format. But in a format in their own league with their own playoff, yeah, you might see that, and it would be super interesting. And some people were like, well, yeah, like nobody would watch that. I would love that. I would watch that. If I'm sitting here watching the FCS playoffs, which I am, by the way, because they're fun to watch, then I, and I know other people, would watch it. It would be awesome. It would be so much fun. I think I actually simmed it, what the 12-team playoff would look like, the other day in College Football 26, and it was super interesting and fun to watch. I think Tulane ended up winning the whole thing, but it was a super fun thing to watch. But anyway, nonetheless, back to this game. Oregon favored by 21.5. DeCorion Moore, Dante Moore, just studs. This is not going to be close. This is not going to be close. I got Oregon winning this thing and covering. I think they win by 45. I really do. I think they win by 5 touchdowns. I think it's a lot like the Washington. I think it looks a lot like the Washington Boise State game this past week, where JMU may come out for like the first couple seconds, score a field goal, look like it's going to be close, and then, you know, Oregon just takes off and JMU scores a touchdown late. I think it's going to be like a 45-10 kind of situation, maybe even like a 52-10 type of situation. It's not going to be a close game. It's not going to be close. And just like I said last year, this is why some of these G5s do not belong, because they're going to come up against these bigger, way better opponents than them, and they're just going to get smashed. They're going to get smashed. So, yep, this one's easy. I got Oregon. All right, last thing we're going to do real quick is just run through some of these bowl games. Wednesday, tomorrow, we got Old Dominion versus USF. They are favored 3.5 in the Staff DNA Bowl. Obviously, give me South Florida. I don't even think it's going to be close. I mean, Old Dominion might make it a... See, this is the thing about bowl games. Bowl games are so hard to pick because you honestly have no idea what a team is going to look like in the postseason with opt-outs and all this different stuff nowadays and head coaches leaving. I mean, USF is going to play this game without their head coach. So give me USF, though. I think it'll be a close one. Louisiana favored by 3 against Delaware in the 68 Ventures Bowl. I think both are 6-6. Give me Delaware in this one. I think that one is going to be a close game as well. But yeah, I'll take Delaware in that one. Thursday, we got Missouri State versus Arkansas State, -1.5 in the Xbox Bowl, which I think this is a new bowl game, but I am also Team Xbox, so love that. I'm going to take Arkansas State in this one. I think this is the first time Missouri State has been in a bowl game. Their first year in FBS to make a bowl game is pretty good, though. Same thing with Delaware, want to mention that. But I think Arkansas State, just because they've been FBS for a while, I'm going to take them. On Friday, we've got the Conference USA champion, Kennesaw State, versus the MAC champion, Western Michigan. Western Michigan, favored by 4, in the Myrtle Beach Bowl, right up the road from us. I wish I could go to this game. That'd actually be a good time. Maybe I will. Maybe I'll see what the tickets look like. I'm sure it won't be that expensive. But obviously, Kennesaw State being way closer to this bowl game, just being right down the road in Georgia, probably like a 4 or 5 hour drive. Western Michigan, definitely going to have to do some flying on this one. Nonetheless, I'm going to go with the Conference USA champion, Kennesaw State, in this one. Go Owls. To be in their second year in FBS, win the conference, I think that's really cool. So I'm going to go with Kennesaw State in this one. Their quarterback is really good. You can escape the pocket, dual threat. I'm going to go with them. Memphis versus NC State. NC State is favored by 5.5 in the Union Home Mortgage Gasparilla Bowl. Memphis did have a Power 4 win against Arkansas this year. They probably shouldn't have had it because Arkansas fumbled that one away. But literally, ha! Anyway, no, I'm going to go with NC State in this one. I think that CJ Bailey is a very active and very good quarterback, very physical, very good decision maker. So I'm going to go with NC State in this bowl game. Saturday, we've got some FCS semifinals along with our playoff first round. Montana versus Montana State in the FCS semifinal. Give me Montana all day long. There's no spreads on these because I don't think they actually do lines for FCS games. But give me Montana all day long. Like Joey said a couple years ago, the heck is a Montana State? I know it exists. I'm just kidding. But I will be taking Montana nonetheless. Illinois State versus Villanova in the FCS semifinal. Villanova had a big comeback win against Tarleton State in that first round last week. Give me Villanova to pull off the upset against Illinois State. I got them. Give me Villanova in that game. And finally, our last game, one of our favorite bowls. This is on Monday of next week because we won't have an episode come out before then. So Monday of next week, Washington State versus Utah State. Utah State is actually favored by 3 in the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. That's just a fun one. I think this is the one where they have French fries in a Gatorade bucket and they pour the French fries all over the coach. Man, I love bowl games, dude. Man, I can't believe Notre Dame not going to play in one. The Pop-Tart Bowl would have been awesome. Anyway, yes, Washington State versus Utah State. I think I'm going to take Washington State in this one. I'm going to go Washington State. I don't know what it is. It's a gut thing, but that's who I am going to be taking in this one. Guys, bowl games are fun. Postseason football is awesome. It's one of our favorite two words. Postseason, I think that's one word. Yeah, postseason football. Two of our favorite words on this channel. And we're super excited for it. We hope you guys are too. Thank you so much for listening. And we want you to always remember, no matter what team you pull for, if you're on God's side, you're always on the winning team. Just know that there's a Father in heaven who loves you. He loves you so much that he sent his only son to die for you. If you've never heard of that, that's called the gospel. The gospel is a Hebrew word that means good news, but not just any good news. It's a good news that was brought from the battlefield declaring that the war had been won. That the battle had been won. Well, what battle has been won? The battle over sin and death. You see, me and you are sinners, and we've created a rift between us and God with our sin because he is holy and cannot exist in the same presence as sin. And because of that, because of his love, he bridged the gap by sending Jesus to pay the penalty that we both owe so that we could be in relation with him again. And all you have to do in order to have that, the Bible says, confess with your mouth and believe in your heart that Jesus is Lord and that God raised him from the dead on the third day. Please repent and believe the gospel. If you don't have that, you need it. If you ever have any questions about that, you can reach out to us at TBDCFB on our TikTok and on Instagram, or you can leave a comment right here on this YouTube video. We're praying for our listeners. We'd love to talk with you, and we hope you know that this is never something where we're trying to shove down your throat, but we just know. We believe that the truth of the gospel is that, the only truth. Jesus said in John 14:6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And we want you to know that because we believe that hell is a real place and we want your eternity to be spent. We want in heaven with Jesus and we want to make heaven crowded. And I hope you know that because it has changed our lives and we believe that to be the only way, the only truth, and the only life. We thank you again so much for listening. We will be back next week to talk about these big-time playoff games, to review them, and to pick the next round of playoff games and some other bowl games, and to just have some fun times, man. Just have some fun times. We hope you guys have a great rest of your week and a great weekend, and we will see you next week. Go Dawgs, and bye-bye.